I can't talk, Gabe. See?
That's the problem. You okay? Are you okay today, Jason?
It's been a long day, brother.
Hey, everybody. This is Gabe, and I'm here with Jason.
What I was trying to say was we are continuing.
You seem like you just woke up or something. You okay?
I'm good.
All right. Awesome.
I was trying to say we are continuing our saga of Out of the Silent Planet and into more of the workings, dealings with of Melisandre and the, I don't know, what do you call this chapter? This is chapter 12. And after I read it, I don't know.
I really liked this. I thought there were some quite like beautiful pieces in it. And I think we definitely learned more about the Hrasa and kind of who they are at the heart of them. And maybe a little bit more about the hierarchy of how the planet operates. And, definitely Ransom kind of struggling with all that. So, I mean, I guess where we left off, and so this is chapter 12 of Out of the Silent Planet, and let's just dive right in since we are already. We left off with Ransom going with Hyoy to go work on a boat. Remember, they passed that little Hrasa cub that was talking to something, and Ransom asked her about it, and she said it was an Eldil, and she couldn't believe that Ransom didn't see it, and he just like wrote it off like she's playing pretend. Okay, so now they are. Hyoy and Ransom are together. They're working on the boat. They're getting stuff ready. Definitely, it seems like they're getting ready for war. And if you remember, Ransom had talked to them about the Hrasa, that kind of big shark-like, creature in the sea. And so it seems like maybe they're about to go hunting or something. And so they're making preparations for that. And so it's during these preparations that kind of, I guess, this whole chapter occurs. It's this conversation between Ransom and Hyoy throughout this process.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think there's some really great nuggets, but I also felt a little too expository in some ways. Again, borderline philosophical. It wasn't in-your-face philosophy like some of the previous chapters of his internal conversation with himself, that being Ransom. This time it's with another, not with another human, obviously. It's with this other creature we'll get into in just a second. But I did like the banter at the very beginning of him trying to go to war, as you said, and that prompted him to ask the question of, well, do you ever fight? Meaning, between the other two dominant species on this planet, that being the Sorns and the other being the Prefrigatrigi.
I've been waiting all week just to hear you say that again. That's hilarious.
I'll get it one of these days.
Yeah, so it's just so funny to me that he is just wrestling with trying to, I guess, figure out this planet in these Earth terms or in what he knows through his own lens or filter. Like, surely this must operate the way that we operate on Earth, right? Where there's wars from time to time, or there's struggles for resources, or whatever the case may be. And so he's trying to ask these questions. And I just love how he always like, what for? Like, why would we ever do that? That's ridiculous, you know? And he asks about, well, what about if there's not enough food? And the answer there, Maladil will not stop the plants growing. Like, there's always going to be food. That's so dumb. Come on, Ransom.
And the running gag through all of it as well is, well, the Sorn know that sort of thing. You need to keep asking, like, when in doubt, Sorn knows those kind of questions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. It's, if there's a question I don't know, then that's something to say for the Sorns. Absolutely.
You definitely get that sense of, even though that they both are building communication and understanding with each other through this language, there's still a lot of frustration on both sides. From Ransom's side, because he's still at a very, lack of a better term, a grade school level of communicating. And so he has a difficult time expounding and explaining what he's thinking. And on the other hand, Hoy is getting frustrated with Ransom because A, he's not fully understanding what he's trying to, what Ransom's asking, but also just saying, dummy, what are you talking, like, that's not how this works. That's not how our planet works here.
Yeah, exactly. And so Ransom is talking about, you know, well, what if you have a ton of people, a ton of Hrasa, right? A bunch of young, wouldn't you run out of plants then? And that's, like you said, he defers mm-hmm. to the Sorns there. And then he asks about, he always come back to him as though, but why would we have that many more young, like right. more than what we currently have at the rate that we currently have them? And Ransom, of course, defers back to the pleasure process, you know, and like, isn't this something you guys like? And he's like, yeah, of course, you know, but I love this here, you know, when he's saying, you know, wouldn't you want to do this over and over? And he always answer of, but why? Why would somebody want dinner all day or want to sleep after they've slept? You know, this constant wanting to, I guess, satisfy a craving at a certain point, like, isn't it enough? And then you start to get to the, I guess, the romanticism or the philosophy of the Hrasa. And as I was reading this, I was thinking, like, okay, these are Ransom's people, just the way that they talk. Like, they're poets, like, truly they are. And, you know, earlier in the last chapter, they were talking about how the Sorns can't make poetry. Of course not. And well, here you can see it expressed in just the way they consider things and ponder things, that it's not just this 1 or 2 or 3 year process of when we mate, but it's even in the reflection of that, even afterwards, you know, that
right.
We treasure every moment, and it's the anticipation, the preparation for it to come, the actual act of whatever it is while it's happening, but then the reflection and appreciation for the moment that has just passed, and the pondering of it, and the continuing, the continual unfolding of that, in all things of life, not just in terms of mating, but in every aspect of the way that they approach life. This is kind of how they live, and he associates that even to the moment that they first met, how it's even still unfolding.
Right, and also, you know, Hoy makes a pretty compelling case. One would say, especially whenever he was saying about songs and poetry and saying, you know, why would we want to go back to the same thing over and over again? Because then it's going to lose its taste. It's going to lose its flavor. It's going to become dull and boring. It just made me think of how, you know, a lot of times for us, when we see a movie or hear a song, you know, we play it over and over and we watch it so many times to the point where you lose that excitement that first
time. It gets played out.
And then you right? just, you let it go, and then you never think about it again. So I was like, okay, yeah totally understand where he's getting at. That being said, the part where when Hoy, he says, you know, and he slowly comes to realization, you mean to tell me that you do it more than once or twice in your lifetime, basically?
Why would you want that? That was pretty funny.
I was like, yes.
Or just even a little further on, Ransom's, you know, reflecting on this conversation. And he can't believe that there's this species that's naturally continent, naturally monogamous.
Right.
And he talks about it as, you know, here's this species that's able to live like the highest standards that they consider on Earth as just normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in doing so, he's like, man, you're not crazy. I'm crazy. That he sees his own species as the puzzle, as the ones who weren't able to, you know, achieve this level that the Hrasa are just already living at.
And so we go on with because now Ransom actually has someone talking to him philosophically. He is now trying to push Howie's thoughts in his statements about, well, what do you do if, you know, taking the analogy like I just mentioned about the poem and the lines, and just saying, well, what if there's a bent Ross? What if there's a bent thought within this line of thinking? And at first, Hoyt is just very dismissive of it. Like, what are you talking about? No way. But then the more Hoyt thought about it, he said, well, now that you're saying it, there is a legend out there, a myth that we adopt. And okay, maybe there is a bent poem made by a bent Ross.
Yeah, yeah, it's so interesting to see the, I don't know, I guess the struggle that he's having with wrestling with what Ransom knows is reality. Like, this is what we are as people. We are fallen and we are bent, and Ransom, you know, is struggling, one, to fathom that there's not that in the Harasa community, but then the other side, like you're saying, that Huey is struggling to understand that from the other perspective as well. And then that, like you said, the legend, you know, that there was a story of what was it, that this Haras who lived a long time ago and saw, I guess, everything in two, right? Two suns in the sky, two heads on a neck. And they say that he fell into such a frenzy that he desired two mates. So this is funny also. I do not ask you to believe it, but that's a story that he loved to Harsini. Like, can you believe it? That's crazy, you know? And this is where Ransom's like, okay, yeah, this is not, you know, like what I'm used to dealing with. This is the species, like I mentioned earlier, that's naturally continent, naturally right. monogamous, you know, somehow they're living in this, you know, standard that we, you know, see as almost hard to get to, these unattained ideals. But here they are, they're living that. And it's amazing. And that's where he says here that it dawned upon him that it was not they, but his own species that were the puzzle, that were the ones that were struggling with these vices and couldn't rein them in or, deny themselves. And here the Harasa take great joy in it. And so I guess, virtue here is something that I was seeing, you know, temperance, moderation, that the idea of savoring moments, and, you know, like what you were saying about music and TV shows and movies, or even food, you know, when you have your favorite thing over and over and over, it really ruins it. It ruins the flavor of it. It's something you actually start to hate, you know? And so that's so much of who we are at times in our, I guess, our most bent state, is wanting to, you know, hit that pleasure button and pound it over and over and over. And here's a species that has found great joy, true joy, really, this joy that has a great deal of depth in denying their urges, but rather in savoring the opportunities that they have. Yeah, it's just a totally different way of living.
And so, you know, using the parallel of, okay, so, you know, the Haras and the species here on this planet are similar to say humans before the fall, not having that obsessive and compulsory acts or the concupiscence, if you will, for that. Ransom does bring up, he brings it back to the Hanakra, which is kind of the serpent of the story, if you will, saying, okay, Hoy, but Meladil, i.e. God, here as you believe on your planet, still created this beast that is swimming in the seas. So it's kind of similar where, if, you know, say we're pre-fall and someone's saying, oh, okay, well, you know, I understand you're saying there's a God, but why did God create the devil? You know, that sort of argument. If God is so great, then why would he create this horrible thing?
Yeah, side note, that is the question my kids love to ask me as they're getting ready for bed, about to lay down, and I'm saying goodnight to them, turning off the light. Hey, Dad, I have a quick question. Why did God make the devil? Oh, gosh. My kids are sandbagging experts, let me tell you. Man. So Ransom basically asked that question. Why is this evil allowed to exist here if there's all this, you know, Maladil has let the Nakra in. But I love Hyoi's response here that, oh, no, that's different, though, mm-hmm. right? That I long to kill Nakra just as he longs to kill me. There's again, it's this, there's a romanticism here, you know, that there is evil, there is danger, and it's in the contrast of this good and evil, safety, danger, this tension, that excitement comes, that joy comes, that I feel alive. And he tells this story of climbing this Hadramit and getting to this high place where it's cool and there's these cool waters and, you know, these great carvings from ancient days. And he's drinking of the pool and he says, there I drank life because death was in the pool, right? That was the best of drinks except for one, that in this pool, the Hanakra, dwelt there, and it's this beauty and also possible danger that made this drink so life-giving. Yeah, it's perfect tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. I love, as you're saying, that it gave Hoi purpose, and he understands his purpose in life. And just like with anything, when you know, like when I know my purpose in this life and I go and face it with all of its struggles and its pains and its highs and its lows, you feel the most fulfilled. And when you're faced with those temptations, you know, to be a good husband, a good father, to follow that path, as Jesus says, the narrow way. The narrow way is not easy. It's not meant to be easy. It truly is a dying to self. And it is in that moment of I'm at death's door because I'm combating the evil one at this very moment. I'm not alone. But man, when you conquer that fear, that's when you feel most alive.
There's this line here from Hyoi talking about this tension, right, and what makes it so good. He says, I do not think the forest would be so bright, nor the water so warm, nor love so sweet, if there was no danger in the lakes. I thought that was beautiful, just the idea. And I thought about salt, right? Mm-hmm, salt mm-hmm. is this bitter flavor, but, you know, when you put a little bit of salt into food, how it just brings this flavor out. Like you put a little salt on a watermelon and it tastes sweeter. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. It's weird how that works, but there you go. Like it's this against the backdrop of something bitter, against the backdrop of something dangerous, you know. And I thought about suffering also, like just the suffering of life and the lows of desolation, that are lows and our times of struggle. But it's also what makes moments of consolation and moments of joy all the more sweet. This, how boring life would be if there were just nothing, if it was just like a flat line, you know, it would just be bland, lukewarm. But because of the lows, there are highs. I love the way he was saying that there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And similar, like you were saying, with suffering, you know, that goes to the heart of in the Christian realm. Whenever we are faced with that question of, you know, if there is such a good God, why is there evil? Why is there suffering? And in sort of a, and I want to be careful because people always take this out of context, but understanding that, you know, God doesn't obviously desire evil, but he will take that evil and use it for his good, for his ultimate goal, his ultimate good, which is for us to be with him in heaven. and taking something horrible and atrocious like evil and suffering to ultimately elevate us, to make us feel more alive, to make us rise even higher to an occasion that we could have ever dreamt of reaching, and ultimately to be with him in heaven, is just mind-blowing to think of. And if you would permit me, just for a moment, I pulled up a brief definition from the Catechism on evil that I think kind of ties in with this. It says, the opposite, evil is the opposite or absence of good. One form of evil, physical evil, is a result of the state of journeying, quote, state of journeying, toward its ultimate perfection in which God created the world, involving the existence of the less perfect alongside the more perfect, the constructive and the destructive forces of nature, the appearance and disappearance of certain beings. You know, and just that just made me think of this tension right here in the story between, you know, the Horas and the Horanka here, and the wanting of the destruction in the Horanka to destroy the Horas and anything else that comes into the water, but also the elevation within the creatures of the Horas.
Yeah. So it's with this realization, I guess, like, you realize here that Hyoy is living life to the full. Mm-hmm. That the Horas are living this life that seems to be free from the constraints of sin. There's no, you know, and they're not succumbing to temptation, to earthly pleasures or Malachandran pleasures. They're living a rightly ordered life, and it's a noble life, and it's a good life, and they see that there is pain and there is sorrow, but that makes the joy and the happy moments that much sweeter and makes life that much brighter. And then that flows into where he says that drink that he had in that pool was the best drinks that he's had save one, and Ransom says, which one? And then the line that follows, death itself and the day I drink it and go to Maladil. And I'm just thinking, man, how this guy Hyoy gets it, you know, like, how rightly ordered is he that he embraces life, he embraces struggle, he embraces his purpose and thrives in that, takes great joy in that, knows who he is because of that. But the only thing that's even greater than that is to take the drink of death so that he can one day go and be with Maladil, which is his ultimate purpose, right?
Yep.
I mean, he doesn't say that, but ultimately, if this is the greater drink, then that's what it is.
And so we wrap up this chapter with Ransom coming back to the first time that he met Hoy and said, hey, it seemed like you were talking to somebody when I was stalking you, basically. And were you talking to yourself? Who were you talking to? And, you know, Hoy was like, oh, to an Eldil. And that's when Ransom was like, wait, that's what Hariki said at the end of the last chapter. Although obviously Ransom didn't say the last chapter, but just a few moments ago, she said the same thing. And basically, what is an Eldil? And correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe, but, you know, Hoy is basically saying, you know, they're like the wind, and they move like the trees blowing in, and they will only be seen unless if they want to be seen. And you have to have the right eyes. And he kind of looks at his eye, you're looking at him, he's like, I don't know if you have the right eyes for it, but, you know, if you do, you'll see them when they want you to see them, and it's only going to be for a very flash. And even if you do see them, you may not even realize that you saw them. And basically, in human terms, it reminded me of angels, and just saying that's, you know, they're always around, but you may not see them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I thought as well. And you know, when he asks, you know, what is an Eldil, and he's like, but there's no Eldil in your world.
Right.
And that must be strange. You know, like, of course there must be. That's strange that there's not. And then he kind of, like you said, goes into the description of of the Eldil here. And then even you know, you maybe sometimes you realize that it's there, but by the time you realize it, it's gone. Yeah, they kind of dictate when you can see them and how you can see them, but ultimately light goes through them. But definitely angels, the idea that there's these spirits that come from Oyarsa. And so that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering who Oyarsa is and how this works. You've got Maladil, who seems to be this god-like being, right? That Hyoi references that, and you know, the last drink will be to drink death and to be with Maladil. So there's that Maladil there that made all things, that even made the Hanarka, right? But then there's still Oyarsa here that kind of governs Malakandra, that sends out these Eldil, or governs the Eldil, or is in charge of them, I suppose, here on Malakandra. And so, it's interesting to see how he factors in with all of this. But definitely they did. Yeah, I was thinking angels as well.
I was thinking of there's a video from a previous show from Archbishop Fulton Sheen, where he discusses about angels. And it's on YouTube. If you look up Fulton Sheen angels, it should be one of the first hits. And it was so beautiful. I mean, Fulton Sheen's amazing, but the way he taught about angels, but also how sure of himself that the angels are clearly present around us. And just like you're saying with Hoya, just saying, "What, you guys don't have that? Of course, that's weird." Like, yeah, we've got he's so sure of himself in the actual fact that they're here, that they're real, this is what they are. And it just brought me a little bit sad of how, unfortunately, at times I think we kiddify like angels in our life, and how we treat them as almost make believe. When like
you mean angels aren't little precious moment figures,
little cherubims,
and they'll look like little children, right?
You know, and I understand, you know, when you see them, or when you're talking to your children or to kids about them, but you know, and one of the prayers that we pray as a family is the Angel of God prayer, and it makes me always appreciate, as you know, as I get older now as a full adult, that no, I still, not only do I have my angel is still trying to speak to me, my angel is always around me, my angel is constantly going, "Oh, please, Jason, please don't do that. Oh, shoot. Okay, come on, buddy. Get up. Okay, come on." And not only my personal angel, but there's countless angels all around that we may not even see or experience just because we're so dull.
Listen, I just found this out, and this is, I feel silly for it, but of course we have our own guardian angel. That's not what I just found out, but each family has its own guardian angel. Each parish has its own guardian angel. There's so many more all around us. It's not just, you know, the one that's your buddy, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody has their own, you know, pal that they're buddying up with. No, of course, not just that. There's so many more, like you're saying, angels all over, that even each family has their own guardian angel. It's mind blowing when you think about it that way. I was going to say, just, I guess, like a last closing thought from me in the chapter. I just wanted to go back. There's a line here again when he's talking about the Hanakra, when Ransom is asking him about it for the first time, and he's like, "How do I make you understand this when you don't understand the poets?" And then he says a line here. He says, "The Hanakra is our enemy, but he is also our beloved." And I was thinking about this. I was really like trying to like frame this appropriately. And And I kept coming to the cross, right? We are called to embrace our cross, to love it, too, because it's through that that ultimately comes the fulfillment of our lives. And then one day to be with God forever in heaven, but that it's not safe. It's not easy, right? This struggle between the krossa and the hnarka are not, it's not safe. It's not easy. It's his enemy, but it's also his beloved. It's his purpose. It's life and death. It's the cross that the cross have been given to deal with, and they've embraced it.
Well, and especially too, and also in the chapter when he says, we hang images of him in our houses, and the sign of all the haras is a hanaraka or hanakra. So yeah, just going to what you're saying, just that is the symbol of this evil thing, i.e. the cross, the crucifixion, this evil thing mm-hmm. to torture and kill someone. We hang in our homes, and we adorn and bow absolutely. Down to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's through this evil thing that life comes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. I think that's a perfect place to finish there. So maybe my prediction, obviously after this chapter needs to be tweaked, and maybe they'll find, you know, they're still going to go on an adventure to try and figure out who this, some of the Oriosa and all of those type of things. But I think now the more immediate adventure, and I guess now I my prediction is, for this book, this particular, this first book is going to be this haraka that Ransom came to see when he first landed. That being the arc of the story now is, okay, now we're going on for this battle. Now that we know
we have an purpose, enemy, right?
we have the enemy, we have the goal, we have a mission. Let's go right. and execute. Whether it's impossible and I die, so be it. My ancestors will celebrate my life, and then they'll go out and try to kill it. But
yeah, I thought that was awesome. Yes. Yeah, I just thought, yeah.
There'll
yeah.
be celebration. Either they're going to celebrate me defeating yeah. and killing it, or they're going to mourn, but then celebrate my life, and then we'll go and try to kill
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and how I went, you know, fearlessly, you know, yeah. And gave of myself. Yeah, no, it's again, it's beautiful. And yeah, we're going to war, Jason. It's time to go to war. We've got an enemy, and we're preparing for battle. So time to go to war.
That's the best music I can do right now. Thank you so much for listening, y'all. Leave some comments. Let us know what you think about this chapter, about this series. Best way to do that and to reach out to us is our website, which is readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. And yeah, also, if you get a chance, share this with others. Especially, that's the best way, is just word of mouth, grassroots, spread it out, you know, share it, love it. And know that we love you guys. And until next time, Gabe, love you, bye.
Love you, bye.